On this edition of the Iowa Business Report.
So you do really have sort of haves and have-nots in this economy. And the have-nots, unfortunately, are low-wage workers, not a lot of safety net. They're also essential workers, so they've been hit twice here.
Reopening the economy will take time. Insight today from one of the nation's top business reporters on the topic. A virtual auction to benefit programs that support business and the next generation of leaders. And in our business profile segment, you'll hear about a century-old Iowa construction company that prides itself on customer loyalty. This is the Iowa Business Report for the third weekend of July 2020.
The Iowa Business Report is presented with support from the Iowa Association of Business and Industry. The Iowa Association of Business and Industry has been the voice of Iowa business since 1903. Learn more online at iowaabi.org. Here is Jeff Stein.
This calendar year began with great optimism. Trade agreements were being finalized, the stock market was at record high levels, and unemployment across demographics was down. Then came March and the global pandemic that literally shut down large aspects of the world economy. Christine Romans is an Iowa native and a graduate of Iowa State University. She is the chief business correspondent for CNN and co-anchors the Early Start program weekdays between 3 and 5 a.m. Iowa time. She is known as the channel's explainer-in-chief of all things money. And as you will note from our conversation recorded on Thursday of this past week, she does that job well.
There's just no precedent, modern precedent. I mean, there are 51 million people who've either lost a job or have been furloughed since the beginning of March. That's 31% of the pre-pandemic labor market. So think about all the people who were working in the beginning of March. 31% of those people are not working today. And it's unclear when they're going to go back. I mean, I look at these numbers and statistics, and I see every week another million first-time unemployment benefits filed. And it's just a huge hole we've dug ourselves into. And the best I could say is we've stopped digging the hole. And that's where we are right now. We have to now figure out how to crawl out.
And I saw this morning, as we're talking, new numbers saying the number of first-time claims nationwide is down from the week before, but it's still more than a million people, to your earlier point.
It's down from devastating levels. I mean, the worst week we had was more than 6 million people had filed for unemployment benefits. And the previous peak was 600 and some thousand in 1982, which was a devastating, devastating recession in the Reagan administration. I mean, these numbers that we're seeing this summer, I can't even believe sometimes when I'm looking at these reports, I'm talking to economists and sources, and then I'm trying to synthesize this and explain there is just no modern precedent for shutting down the American economy on purpose to save lives, to get control of a virus so that we can reopen again on the other side. We're still really maybe in the early innings of how we get this under control before we get back to a regular sort of open economy.
And there is a point, is there not, where those people returning to work, that's going to level off because some of these jobs are just not going to return.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think there's no question that any kind of industry that involves a lot of people and a lot of face-to-face with customers and your employees, they're trying to figure out how to limit that face-to-face. And that can mean you might need fewer faces. It also might also mean that you're going to change the kind of jobs that are, you know, you're going to shift the kind of work. So for example, diners, I live in New Jersey, it's like the land of diners, right? They're putting these plexiglass protection areas around tables and between the grill and the dining room and all this stuff. So there's a whole industry in retrofitting our current spaces. And that's creating jobs, but it's also creating an awful lot of anxiety for business owners who are trying to figure out, what is the standard going to be? What are they going to be required to do? What is it going to look like a year from now? Assuming we get a vaccine. I think that big crowded events where people are face to face and shouting or singing or yelling, I think that we're going to be a little scarred by this before we go back to doing that kind of behavior, you know, full out in the next year or so.
Are there certain parts of the country that are riding this out more smoothly than others?
That's a really good question, because I think we're still learning about that. For example, there was a really interesting story in the Wall Street Journal this week about how GM and Ford, they had put on three shifts in some cases to get back up and running because they wanted to go back, you know, full force to start making cars again. And they're having trouble fielding a full shift in some cases because people's, their kids are home from school. They may be sick. They may have a relative who's sick. Suddenly they're quarantined again because grandma came and grandma has a fever. So I think that there are people who want to go back to work and have every indication, every effort of going back to work. But the virus is changing our family lives and our work life so much that it's been a little uneven and difficult. I don't know anybody that's really riding it out perfectly. I mean, even if you're in a state or a county where you don't have very many cases, say you're sending your kid to Canada for college in the fall, well, the Canadian border is closed. So now that's disrupted your life. There's just so many ways that it's still disrupting regular life.
I suppose that allows for some entrepreneurial spirit, though, doesn't it? Much like the way you mentioned with plexiglass dividers, et cetera.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, there are people who are out there trying to figure out how to make it work in the, you know, in the COVID pandemic. But there are things like cruise lines and air travel and any kind of leisure and hospitality, any kind of big venue with lots of people crowded together, bars and restaurants. These things are really, they're designed to have people close together. That's the entire experience. And that's exactly what spreads the virus and will hold back the economy if we don't get it under control. So for those areas, I'm really concerned about what recovery is going to look like and how long it's going to take. And I'm worried about the workers in those fields. There will be fewer of them, I think, on the other side.
You've got certain industries that are just going to be decimated for some time to come and their workers. Are there other segments of the economy that are really bearing the brunt of this? Obviously, the travel industry, tourism industry, but are there others?
It's travel, it's tourism, it's retail. I mean, retail has really been upended here. Yet, you look at Amazon and you look at Netflix and you look at some of these other sort of pandemic havens that have done so well. You look at the stock market. The stock market has been fine this summer, in part because of all the stimulus from the Fed and from Congress. So you do really have sort of haves and have-nots in this economy. And the have-nots, unfortunately, are low-wage workers, not a lot of safety net. They're also essential workers. So they've been hit twice here. One, they're hit because they're more likely to lose their job. Second, they're hit in some cases because they're made to go back to the job. If you work in a grocery store, for example, or a meatpacking plant, and you can be exposed to the virus. So it's a very dangerous and anxiety-ridden moment, I think.
For lack of a better phrase, I'm going to say supply chain. But okay. I've been told it isn't exactly the supply chain per se. It was more consumer demand shifting when this all happened, when grocery store shelves and big box store shelves all of a sudden were empty. As this may ramp up again, are we going to worry about people hoarding toilet paper and cans of soup and that sort of thing?
Wasn't that fascinating to watch human behavior and sort of a crowd psychology? And you could watch it changing through the spring. We actually talked to some of the executives at Walmart about where we were in the pandemic phase. And it was toilet paper. Then it was puzzles. Then it was trampolines. And then there was a shortage of hot tubs and boats. You know, as people realized they were going into the summer and they were trying to you know get away and do something else. I don't know what the next sort of consumer quirk will be, but I'm sure there'll be one because we're sort of rewriting the rules of consumption and retail here, and we're not spending money on things like plane tickets, and we're staying home so much more that you know, for example, an Xbox. All of a sudden, you know, the stores could open again, retail stores could open again, and you couldn't get your hands on a new Xbox in this country or this new Switch device. You know, so people are buying video games and consoles and they're binging on Netflix and they're spending money and their behavior in different ways. I don't know what the next consumer move on that is. I wish I did because I'm sure that there's an investment play there. But it has been really interesting to watch how people have behaved.
Let me ask you lastly, because again, if we can't think of what the next big thing will be to invest in, what should people do? Because we obviously have an election year and that causes a lot of consternation. But if people are sitting there and saying, all right, what's the best thing I ought to do to protect myself and my family? What are a few thoughts?
I'm so glad you asked that because I paint this picture of gloom and doom with this 51 million people who have filed for unemployment benefits. And yet I talk to people, especially young people, who tell me for the first time ever, they're able to pay a little bit more than the minimum on their student loans because they have a $600 extra a week in their unemployment benefits from stimulus. Congress did that on purpose. I talked to a couple of people who are not getting having a big, humongous wedding. Instead, now they're looking to buy property. They're using the wedding money as a down payment on a home. So there are people who do see this disruption as a way to really kind of consolidate, take a look at what your debt situation is, pay down your debt. You know, interest rates are so cheap here too. Refinance your home if you need to. I mean, 30-year rates are almost free for mortgage money. You know, find those things that you can, these levers that you can pull in a pandemic and try to improve your position. I also keep telling people, you know, you have to live below your means. I say that all the time. People look at me like I'm crazy. But in some cases, that $600 extra a week in the unemployment benefits allows people for the first time ever to put a little bit of money away. And so I think that's really important, not to spend your money, but figure out how to save and grow your money. And no matter what's happening, that should be our mindset.
Christine Romans, Emmy Award-winning business correspondent for CNN and an Iowa native. She is the author of three books, the most recent, Smart is the New Rich, Money Guide for Millennials. She spoke to me via Zoom from her office at CNN in New York on Thursday morning of this past week. You can hear our full conversation online. It's an IBR Extra. Go to totallyiowa.com and click on the radio programs link or check your favorite podcast source. Still to come, a black tie event goes virtual and far less formal. And we'll profile a company with an admirably high level of repeat business. You're listening to the Iowa Business Report.
Iowa's manufacturers have shown pride and commitment during the COVID-19 pandemic. I'm Mike Ralston of the Iowa Association of Business and Industry. Whether retooling their plants to make face shields, masks, and other needed supplies, or providing pay and benefits for workers during a slow economic time, these businesses are the foundation of our recovery. Learn more at iowaabi.org.
The Iowa Business Report is a copyrighted production of Totally Iowa Media, which is solely responsible for its content. For more, click on the radio programs button at totallyiowa.com.
One of the popular activities at the Iowa Association of Business and Industry's annual Taking Care of Business Conference each year is an auction to benefit the ABI Foundation. It's typically a formal affair, but in this age of COVID-19, the auction is taking on a different form this coming week. Bidding will begin on Monday, July 20th at 7 a.m., and the auction will close at 1 p.m. on Friday, July 24th. The week-long digital auction is open to everyone this year, including a live virtual finale via Zoom on Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. The ABI Foundation provides support for statewide leadership efforts we've talked about previously on this program, including Leadership Iowa, Leadership Iowa University, and Business Horizons. Auction items include Iowa-produced products and services and the ability to participate in unique experiences and events. You can bid or simply make a direct donation to the foundation, which is a 501c3 nonprofit entity. To see what's up for bid or to register for the auction or the finale, go to iowaabi.org and click on the auction image you'll find rotating on the main page. Up next, learn about an employee-owned construction company that does business across this country and beyond. You're listening to the Iowa Business Report.
The Iowa Business Report is presented with support from the Iowa Association of Business and Industry, helping develop the next generation of business leaders through Leadership Iowa and Leadership Iowa University. To learn more, go to iowaabi.org.
In this week's Business Profile segment, the story of Carl A. Nelson & Company, headquartered in Burlington, with additional offices in Cedar Falls and Washington, Iowa. Dan Culp is Director of Business Development for Carl A. Nelson & Company.
Carl A. Nelson & Company is a general contractor design-build company started in Burlington, Iowa in 1913 by a Swedish immigrant named Carl A. Nelson. It's grown from being a small contractor in the early stages of the business to a fairly good-sized contractor today. We work in several different markets in healthcare, industrial, and a lot of K through 12 projects here in the state of Iowa. We also do power plant projects, recreational projects. So we have a very wide background and experience in our company. Our company is employee-owned, and it's been employee-owned for probably about 80 years now, since the 1940s, which was early for, you know, employee ownership companies. And we have about 130 employees total in the company. So fairly good sized business for Southeast Iowa. Our reach is really regional. We work all throughout the Midwest, but generally with clients that are repeat clients for us. So we don't generally go chase work that's outside of our core area. It's generally brought about by customers who say, Carl A. Nelson, we want you to go do this project for us in Idaho, in New York. In fact, one of our clients that we did all of their work here in the United States for quite some time decided they were going to build a pet food plant in Guelph, Ontario. This was a French company at the time. They came to us and said, we want you guys to be our design builder. And so we developed a Canadian entity, went to Guelph, Ontario, built a large pet food manufacturing facility there for them. And it was because their experience with us on all the projects before that caused them to want to use us to do that project outside of our country.
Now, when you do these projects, whether it's outside the country or in Idaho, New York, do you take a whole crew from Iowa? Do you hire people on site there, or is it a blend?
It really depends. It's usually a blend. Definitely on the project in Canada, we were not allowed to take our craftsmen into Canada to work there. And so we developed a joint venture with a Canadian firm that facilitated that part of the project. They provided the labor and we provided the project management for that. And the design of that project was under us. That was a design build project. Our portion of that was about $50 million. So it was a fairly good sized project and quite an undertaking, considering that, you know, there's a lot of differences in Canadian laws and zoning requirements than there is in the United States. So there was a lot of hurdles to overcome on that project. But a lot of the projects are projects where our superintendents go to that remote location, and sometimes we'll have construction crews on those sites, and sometimes we don't. It just depends on the type of project.
This is a question just born of my ignorance, but when I hear that someone is a construction company, I guess I didn't necessarily think that you might have certain specialties. For example, you specialize in schools or you specialize in a few different types of facilities that you mentioned. Is that common in the industry?
It's somewhat common, yes. I think different construction companies look for their niche where they have good experience. And also, a part of what causes that for us is that there are certain skill requirements for different types of projects. Not everybody can do those things. Some contractors, they want to be the contractor for everything. It's very difficult to be competent in all types of construction markets. For instance, on the industrial side, our company does a lot of industrial projects, and we have a variety of experience in different types of those projects. And we have developed a core competency in our company of doing code analysis. And it's very important for really any project, but especially for industrial clients who have hazardous storage issues. And we've really, I think, raised the bar on that to where we had one large manufacturer that was rebuilding or building a new manufacturing plant. They asked us to come on board, not as a contractor, but as their code consultant, because of the experience that we have and the expertise that we have in doing that. And now, that's not our first goal necessarily. We would rather be building the building. But at times for different clients, we'll unbundle our services to satisfy what their needs are. And then kind of on a whole different side of the scale, we do a lot of projects for K through 12 schools in Iowa, but as a construction manager, because in Iowa, design build is not allowed for public entities. And so we feel like the construction management scenario or delivery method is the best delivery method for school districts who don't have a lot of expertise in construction and do need a lot of help in understanding the issues and the complexities of a construction project.
And that's a very fair point, because a for-profit business that might be a very large national business, they might be building plants every couple of years somewhere across the country, but your regular garden variety school district in Iowa, it's a big generational thing when they do a school district.
Right.
What's the greatest challenge the business faces today?
Before the coronavirus, I would say that it's really skilled labor. And I think that's probably true across many businesses, is to find people who are willing to learn a skilled trade, but also show up for work, be able to drive themselves to work, and be able to pass a drug test. You know, that's a difficult thing today in our marketplace. And it's essential, because many of our clients require us to meet certain levels of drug testing and other testing. And so we have to have people that can meet those. And that's a difficult part in our industry today.
What is it that makes Nelson unique as a company for you as an employee or for the customers? What is it that helps you stand out?
There's a part of our company mission statement that says that we work in a way that's fair and honest, that we provide quality workmanship. And I think the big key factor is a service second to none. And we get feedback from our clients that that is true, that when we do a project for them, they feel like they're receiving that kind of service that they haven't received in previous projects with other firms. And a part of that is our employee ownership also. That changes our focus on the client. We look at our projects more from a client perspective than we do as a contractor. And so we try to spend their money the way that we think that we would spend our money. And I think the client sees that and appreciates that level of trust and confidence they have in us.
Dan Culp, Director of Business Development for Carl A. Nelson and Company of Burlington, a company that has thrived for more than a century and for more than 70 years after the death of its founder, due to a strong work ethic that has been rewarded by customers. More online at CarlANelsonCoConstruction.com. And that brings us to the close of this week's Iowa Business Report. Next week, some new online tools designed for these post-pandemic business times. And we'll introduce you to an Iowa-based company whose business has evolved beyond the borders of the U.S. That's next week at this same time. I'm Jeff Stein. Thank you for joining us, and we hope you have a prosperous week.
The Iowa Business Report is presented with support from the Iowa Association of Business and Industry. Follow ABI on Twitter at Iowa ABI and online at iowaabi.org.